all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
If you are hearing Stevie Ray Vaughan's Crossfire at 6 o'clock in the morning, you're my kind of people. You either have a killer playlist for getting on the treadmill in the morning, or you're listening to Up North News Radio. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. You're here in the state of Wisconsin Sense on the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful day up north and all across the Civic Media Radio Network on this Friday morning. It's August 18th. It's 53 degrees up here on the lake. Madison coming in at 51 this morning. Hayward, chilly at 42. Toma, 41. Green Bay is at 52 degrees this morning. We're going to unpack the news this morning, tell you about some quiet accomplishments and some loud dysfunction. It's going to get really noisy again in the U.S. Capitol over the next few weeks as the next budget fight leads to another showdown and maybe another government shutdown. Meanwhile, Americans are quietly getting relief in multiple ways through the Inflation Reduction Act, the bipartisan infrastructure law, so much more. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil has this week's Washington Roundup. We'll also talk about how Donald Trump has just asked to push one of his trials to 2026. He also the other day promised a blockbuster report that's just going to blow the doors off of, you know, any kind of a criminal case against him. And now he says, never mind. Also, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is considering whether to fast-track a lawsuit challenging the state's gerrymandered maps. And the court's right-wing justices, who in the past have had no issue fast-tracking other cases with political overtones, have suddenly found reason to be against a speedy determination of whether you and all Wisconsin voters deserve fair maps. We'll talk to Mark Jacob about national media coverage, highs and lows of the week. Dan Schumacher will talk about sports with us. And if you want to join in as well, our phone number is 844-967-2789. You can call or text that number. You can email us at radio@upnorthnewswi.com. You can comment on our Facebook page, and you can text us on the Civic Media app. In fact, again, our first choice always is that you are part of, you know, the action on your Civic Media radio station, wherever you are locally. But Aaron Zommers joining us out of Madison right now. I was texting with somebody about booking a potential guest, and they were asking, well, do you have a YouTube component? And I had to add it all up, and I wrote back, we are on one YouTube channel, two Twitter channels, five Facebook pages, along with eight radio stations. And this person said, okay, and went ahead and booked a guest for us. So I guess we passed the audition.
Excellent, yeah.
Yeah, we are out there. We're everywhere.
Just about.
We're the bad penny. Can't get rid of us at 6 o'clock in the morning. You are doing a road trip this week.
A little bit. I don't know if necessarily I'd call it a road trip, but yeah, I'm heading up to Manitowoc because it is my youngest sister's 21st birthday tomorrow.
That's right. Okay. So like something like a family thing at home, or we're bar hopping, you know, in downtown Manitowoc. Studio 8 isn't even there anymore, is it?
I don't believe it used to be
our favorite like disco bar in Manitowoc. I think it's something else now, but what's the plan going to be here?
We're going to be staying home. She doesn't know if she'll be able to tolerate alcohol at all because she's never had it. So we'll see how that goes. She's also gluten-free, so I'm going to bring some gluten-free beer for her to try. And she said, sure, I'll try it as long as you have the option of drinking it if I don't like it. And I was like, sure, I can do that.
Okay, very nice. All right, well, hopefully that will go well for you as well. The daily newsletter that Up North News puts out comes out around 5 a.m. or so. And on Fridays, it's always there's always a roundup section of stories you might have missed during the week as well. So there's ways that you can get Wisconsin State Fair food throughout the year. Wisconsin is getting a new area code for one part of the state, and what to expect during the first Republican presidential debate, which takes place next week in Milwaukee. And a story about how Governor Evers has budgeted for all Wisconsin students to have free meals at school, and yet it still hasn't happened yet. Listeners to this program can probably figure out why that hasn't happened yet, but others are learning about it from our newsletter. You can sign up for it over at our website, and that's upnorthnewswi.com. So there will be a lot of headlines to talk about today, and then we'll also get the weatherology forecast for this weekend. And it's going to be dry, and it's going to be hot. And I guess it's going to be hazy again. I guess we're still dealing with those wildfires up in Canada. You would have thought everything that could burn up there has burned by now, but obviously that's not the case. It's been a terrible summer there, and so we will be dealing with smoke that trickles down this way with the currents, especially given this high pressure system that right now is bringing us all this cool air from up north this morning. But then eventually we'll be on the backside, and as it starts to sweep up warm air from the south, it is going to be, there's going to be a lot of 90s, I think, to report throughout the early to middle part of next week. So we'll get all the details from meteorologist Jennifer Vucicki coming up from Weatherology in just a little bit. And then also, after this upcoming break, we will tell you about the Brewers wrapping up their three-game trip to Los Angeles to play the Dodgers. The Dodgers have been hot. The Dodgers are still hot. And that's a darn shame because Corbin Burns pitched a heck of a game last night, I hear. We'll tell you the details on that and so much more coming up in just a bit. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back. We're going to do some Dirty Dancing tunes throughout the morning here on this Friday. Unfortunately, for melancholy reasons, as we mark the anniversary of the birth of Patrick Swayze, born on this day in 1952, which would make him would have made him 71 years old today, but he passed away back in 2009. But we're going to remember happier times through the work of his dancing and acting prowess on Dirty Dancing through all those years. Well, normally the Brewers are out west, and the Brewers were playing the Dodgers again last night. Normally I get the summary off the Associated Press. This time around, I'd rather give credit to Kurt Hogg from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, because he says it in a much better way. He just says, Corbin Burns, the Brewers starter, delivered a Cy Young level performance Thursday night at Dodger Stadium. Nobody else on the Milwaukee Brewers offered any assistance. The Brewers offense came up empty against the Los Angeles Dodgers starter Lance Lynn and the bullpen, particularly in key situations with men on base, as it had another rotten night. Burns went 7 scoreless innings against a lineup averaging nearly 7 runs in the month of August. Burns struck out 9 and allowed only 2 hits, and yet the Dodgers won 1-0 for their 11th win in a row and sweeping the Brewers. An even better thing now that they swept the White Sox in Chicago for the 3 games before coming to LA, and now they're already bound for Texas. They have a game tonight against the Texas Rangers to get that series started. And so far, even though there was that sweep, the Brewers are still your National League Central Division leaders, leading both the Chicago Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds by 2 games as we head into, we're not quite the closing weekends of the season, but we're starting to feel it. You know, there is that little nip in the air, especially this morning. My special correspondent who drives to Rice Lake every day tells me the colors are starting to change on some of the trees up there. So we will be watching the standings a little more closely, and you can catch the Brewers Texas series throughout the weekend if you're in the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support 98.3, 1100 AM. Or if you're more in the Richland Center area, tune in to WRCE News from the Center 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. All right, let's unpack the news. Some headlines now. You can react to them, vent a little about them, share what else is on your mind. You can call or text us at 844-967-2789. You can email us, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. You can comment on our Facebook pages, and as I mentioned to Aaron a minute ago, we're on several of them, including Up North News and Civic Media and Bull Falls Radio and 93.5 The Tap here in Chippewa Falls, and you can use the Civic Media app to send us a text. Where to begin? Let's start with the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which has decided, of course, it has a progressive majority now, and has decided to at least listen to a request to directly take up the challenge to the state's gerrymandered maps. Now, again, the way the process normally works is usually it's heard in some county circuit court someplace, and then there's a court of appeals, and then there's the state Supreme Court. But there are times when a state Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme Court can kind of reach down and pluck a case up and say, you know what, this is clearly an important case. Somebody's requested that we take it up right away, and we're going to do that, or at least we're going to consider doing that. And that's what's happening with the Wisconsin Supreme Court. They've said they're going to consider taking this up directly. That, again, is not a rare thing and has definitely happened when the court was controlled for 15 years by conservative justices, sometimes for rather outrageously political reasons, where it was clearly transparent what they were doing. And yet, again, mocking Casablanca, they are shocked, shocked to find out that it could happen as well when progressives control the court. And in doing so, right-wing Justice Rebecca Bradley, again, I don't know the legal term, so I'm going to go with flipped out, wrote a dissenting opinion that was all about politics. She could not have sounded more like another, you know, right-wing radio station talking head. It was supposed to be just a dissenting opinion on whether to take up the case directly or not. And instead, Rebecca Bradley writes, despite receiving nearly $10 million from the Democrat Party of Wisconsin and declaring the maps rigged, Justice Janet Protasiewicz has not recused herself from the case. These four justices will adopt new maps to shift power away from Republicans and bestow an electoral advantage for Democrat candidates, fulfilling one of Protasiewicz's many promises to the principal funder of her campaign. Again, that's not normally how you word the documents that come along with a state Supreme Court, dissent. But she goes out and names all four justices, says Ann Walsh Bradley, Rebecca Dallet, Jill Krakowski, and Janet Protasiewicz will force all the parties in this case to expend considerable resources, including taxpayer money, to respond to a petition everyone knows will be granted. To show how unhinged this is, I turn to one of the other conservative justices on the state Supreme Court, Brian Hagedorn, who does not play along well with Rebecca Bradley and with Chief Justice Annette Ziegler, the two right-wing justices. Conservative Brian Hagedorn puts out a concurring opinion that simply says the following. Our standard approach when receiving a petition for original action is to allow the parties an opportunity to be heard. Doing so here should give us a fuller picture of the issues in this case, and from there, we can determine how best to proceed. Again, a few years back, I would never have said I was going to be saying as many nice things as I have been about Brian Hagedorn, because there are many issues on which we disagree. But in terms of how a justice conducts themselves, that's how you do it. You say, look, they've asked us for original action, meaning take up the case directly. We will hear the evidence. We will hear the arguments, rather. And then we will make a decision. Doesn't seem to be that hard. And yet for Rebecca Bradley, she goes on and on about the Democrat Party, which, again, all you can do is just kind of shake your head at it and say, that's what you've got. You know, we're going to call it the Democrat Party. stop. Former President Donald Trump has said that he's going to put out a blockbuster report that is going to tell everybody just how terrible the case is against him for trying to steal the 2020 election. And then he backtracked on it. He had earlier said that the report was going to come out next Monday and would be irrefutable about proving his claims of voter fraud during the 2020 election. And that's the key point here. He's not promising an irrefutable report that defends his actions. He's promising an irrefutable report to prove his claims about voter fraud in 2020. Well, wouldn't that be a relief? Finally, we would get this report that he and Pillow Guy and everybody else has been clamoring about. And of course, at the state level, all of the legislators who've talked about irregularities. Finally, we're going to see the voter fraud that led to them trying to stage a coup. And yet, Donald Trump has put out a new social media post on his tiny social media network that says, rather than releasing the report on the rigged and stolen Georgia 2020 election, my lawyers would prefer putting this irrefutable and overwhelming evidence of election fraud and irregularities in formal legal filings as we fight to dismiss this disgraceful indictment and publicity campaign by a DA, blah, 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 blah. So we're not going to do it now. So Trump is not going to put out the report. He's also not going to debate. Again, with him, things could always change on a moment's notice. But again, on his tiny social media network, he says about debating in Milwaukee next week, many people are asking whether or not I will be doing the debates. All Americans have been clamoring for a president of extremely high intelligence. As everyone is aware, my poll numbers are extraordinary. In fact, I am leading the runner-up, whoever that may now be, by more than 50 points. Reagan never did that. Neither did others. People know my record, one of the best ever. So why would I debate? I'm your man. I can't say on the radio what other fellow Republicans had to say about that, other than, to play chicken sound effects. And I don't really have to do that for you. Unfortunately, for Ron DeSantis, the news isn't much better. There is a lot of paperwork now out on the interwebs about Ron DeSantis's debate prep, because hundreds and hundreds of pages of documents about it were discovered on the web, giving all kinds of advice to him about how he's got to sharply go after Vivek Ramaswamy and how he's got to defend Trump and on it goes. And I won't bore you with the details. Instead, I'd rather pull back the curtain a bit and tell you behind the scenes how this works. You see, again, the rules of elections are ridiculous. There's so many holes, make the Swiss cheese analogy. And one of the things is that you can't have collaboration between a PAC, a political action committee, and a campaign. They cannot directly talk to one another. So what PACs and other special interest groups do, or what the campaigns do sometimes, is they put information out there for the public, kind of, wink. It's on some very obscure page of some obscure website. And then the other side can go, oh, look at this information that we found. We're going to use it. And I'm going to make a confession to you. It happens all the time. It happened in my congressional campaign, happened in my legislative campaign. That's how these things work. It's not illegal. It's an indictment of just how ridiculous the current system is. And so it's not the world's biggest surprise that somebody somewhere saw all this debate prep info and tipped off the media, and now everybody's having a field day with it. It's just to say we really deserve a better system in this country, but since we don't have that, we're going to get these little sideshows, and now we'll be watching next week to see if Ron DeSantis does, in fact, do the things that he says that, or his debate prep says that he should do along the way. All right, let's take a break here, and when we come back, Kia Vakil, Courier Newsroom's national correspondent, will talk to us. We talked to him from Los Angeles so that he could sleep in this morning. But when we spoke, we talked about more things out of Washington, including the potential for another government shutdown because of a dysfunctional Republican-run House of Representatives. We'll be back. You're up north. As we get going again here on Friday morning on Up North News Radio, Kia Vakil joins us, national political correspondent out there on the West Coast. And as always, we're appreciative of his time. Kia, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I am hanging in there.
I know. It's been a long week, and there's been a lot to read. The Georgia stuff, you know, I mean, it came so fast. I have admitted before I was wrong. You know, they started presenting to the grand jury Monday morning, I think it was, and I thought it might drag on. I thought they might not even get a majority vote for charges. And I mean, they got it all. They got it close to midnight, but they got it all that day. So we all had to digest everything. So now that we've had a few days to go through everything, it still seems to be as serious as when it was first read. And yet some Republicans still want to somehow be dismissive of it. I don't know. Do we think the American people are going to dismiss this, or is it something they're going to pay attention to as it moves along?
I think they are going to pay attention to it. I think, you know, there are, let's say, 35 to 40% of the electorate that will back Trump no matter what, that will view this as a witch hunt, will disregard it. But, you know, there was literally new polling out this week from Quinnipiac that a majority of independents, you know, support prosecuting Trump for charges around trying to overturn 2020. And that most people believe, you know, he should be held accountable. And so I do think people will pay attention, especially because, you know, there's arguments to be made that, you know, the New York case is, you know, not necessarily particularly strong, but these two cases about 2020 are exceptionally strong. I have read through the indictments. They lay out a pretty meticulous case against Donald Trump. For trying to overturn 2020 and undermine democracy. Because it's not like he just tried it one way. He tried it a whole bunch of ways with a whole bunch of people. He took a whole, you know, there's a whole lot of notes on these criminal conspiracies.
Are you taking notes on a criminal conspiracy? I mean, yeah, there's a lot of notes.
I'm glad you picked up what I was putting down there. That's exactly what I was referencing. and notably in Georgia, you know, there are... 18, I believe, other people indicted, yes. And mm-hmm. all indicted on RICO charges, which what's important about that is it means that they very well, prosecutors there, could try to persuade some of these people to flip against Trump in order to. And so there is a decent chance that that will happen, or at least could happen, which that is different than in the federal case, which does not have, you know, other indictments against other individuals, at least not yet, other than obviously in the documents case, which is separate. But all of which to say, you know, the Georgia case is strong. There is a lot there, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out.
I have to say again, for folks that might have missed it before, even I have never seen The Wire, but all you got to do is Google up. Is you taking notes on a criminal conspiracy, and you're going to love the memes and the GIFs that come up. So you know, do yourself a favor, even if you didn't watch that. All right. Back to, with Trump, you know, we are wondering about, you know, showing up in a courtroom there at the police station to turn himself in, get a mugshot and everything. And meanwhile, you know, there's still speculation that he will or won't come to Milwaukee for the presidential primary debate. But we know plenty of candidates will be in Milwaukee next Wednesday. So let's ask ourselves what kinds of questions all of the other candidates are going to get. I guess I will give Brett Baer of Fox, quote unquote, News I'll give them enough credit that I think there are going to be a couple of challenging questions in there, but what's your take on whether this will turn out to be a valuable exercise?
I mean, I think a lot of it depends on if Trump is there or not. And also, I would bet any amount of money that one of the first 1 to 3 questions would be about Trump's indictments. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be revealing, because if you know, already we've seen most of the candidates, from Tim Scott to Vivek Ramaswamy to Ron DeSantis, talk about how, you know, try to dismiss it and claim this is all a hatchet job and a political, you know, witch hunt. But there's plenty of evidence that that's not the case, obviously. And so it will be interesting to see if they continue with that. It'll be interesting to see if Mike Pence and Chris Christie continue to, you know, be the two voices of reason, which is astonishing to say out loud for me.
Yep.
But I don't think the debate really is going to make very much difference at all, frankly. If Trump is there, I think he'll, you know, probably just do what he always does, which is run roughshod over people. If he's not there, most of the questions will probably still be about him. And there is no indication that anyone is building any real momentum to unseat him from being the king of that party. You know, I say king quite intentionally, because the way he commands the Republican Party in the House and in the Senate, and pretty much all over the country, to be loyal to him, basically by virtue of, you know, by threat of political career death, is not democratic at all.
Well, I mean, come on. It's a party that in 2020 didn't even adopt a platform. Didn't adopt a platform. Their platform is whatever Donald Trump says, you know, wherever you go, I will follow. So, no, King is not hyperbole by any stretch. But the other candidates, in the hopes of either becoming president or his running mate or something, you know, trudged off to the Iowa State Fair. And our colleagues and friends at Iowa Starting Line did, you know, masterful work covering it all. As you were watching the candidates try to avoid gaffes, or like Ron DeSantis, try to avoid, you know, human contact, what were some of your takeaways from, you know, the poor folks of Iowa being subjected to that candidate field?
Yeah, I mean, based on what I saw and what our reporters who were on the ground there saw, you know, it pretty much confirms that, you know, Trump is the leader of this field. He showed up briefly. He, you know, gave a half-hearted effort and people still ate it up. And then you've had people like Tim Scott and, you know, Pence and DeSantis, Ramaswamy all show up too, but, you know, could not, you know, grab even a remote amount of the attention that Trump did. So there's that. You know, there's the fact that Mike Pence honestly continues to be asked about January 6th and continues to hold to his guns, which I, you know, is pretty much the only positive thing I can say about Mike Pence since he became Trump's vice president, is that he will die on this hill, and I respect that. And otherwise, you know, you're seeing DeSantis, he's trying to rebrand himself as a family man, you know, playing bumper cars with his kids. But his, you know, they blocked one of our reporters from attending one of his events, which, you know, is not a great look for someone who claims to be, you know, a warrior for freedom and free speech.
Right. So they will gather and they will talk about, I hope, maybe talk about their ideas, you know, the actual policy, not culture war things, but, you know, actual plans for the future. And they will go up against, you know, President Biden and his plans, his ideas, his record. And he talked a lot about that record this week as the Inflation Reduction Act hit its first anniversary. So as you looked at that coverage this week from the president and others, you know, we've said in the past that Americans, by and large, you know, couldn't really tell you what all is in it, but they seem to like what's in there. And they, when somebody like President Biden talks about it, like he did in Milwaukee this week, they go, oh, that's in there. Yeah. I like that. That seems to be what I've got out of the coverage this week.
Yeah. I mean, every poll of every measure in the law is incredibly popular, shows it's incredibly popular. The problem is, you know, a lot of these measures are ones that don't take effect for a few years. The ones that are in effect, you know, are occasionally difficult to convey in a sentence, you know, but effectively the ones that are already helping people are lowering premium costs for health insurance, are ensuring that seniors with diabetes, you know, don't have to ration their insulin or go broke paying for it. It's making sure that, you know, seniors can get the vaccines they need, and that over time, you know, drug costs will no longer be, the costs of many high priced drugs will be reined in for those who get Medicare. So those are some of the healthcare, you know, provisions. You know, in Wisconsin, you know, that means 43,000 people who could have lost their health insurance last year or this year kept it because they got more, they got the government extended subsidies under the Inflation Reduction Act. And what that means is it's lowering the cost of monthly health insurance premiums to the point where they are affordable for people. And, you know, that matters. It's, you know, it's health insurance premiums are one of the, you know, after your rent or mortgage, and, you know, it's got to be among the next one or two high costs that families face, you know? And so that is a difference maker. It's not that, you know, part of the reason I think the law has not resonated quite as much is because, you know, over the year or two before, you people were getting, you know, $1,400 checks deposited into their account and all these other provisions that were fantastic, but a little noisier, a little, you know, sexier, for lack of a better term. And, you know, subsidy for a health insurance premium, it doesn't roll off the tongue.
Right. Well, and it's always tough. I mean, good policy, you know, does not always lend itself to great, you know, packaging and marketing, but that's one of their challenges, and they're just going to have to try to live up to it, especially over the course of the next 14 months or so. But in the short term, we have a Congress that is decidedly divided and yet is going to have to work out some kind of a deal here, because, you know, that whole debt ceiling matter, it never really went away. They basically put a pin back in the grenade and said, well, let's see how things look in October when we're writing next year's budget. Well, we're getting close to October writing next year's budget. And are they going to actually need a stopgap spending bill before they get to that point? And isn't that just going to pull the pin right back out and we're right back where we were a few months ago?
Yeah, I mean, I would not be shocked if they struggle to even get a stopgap bill, because right now what the dynamic is that the far right Republicans in the House pretty much won't agree to anything on budgets unless they're massive cuts from this current year, fiscal year. And that's obviously a non-starter for every Democrat. It's a non-starter for a lot of the moderate Republicans. And so there aren't, you know, enough votes for Kevin McCarthy to pass very much of anything right now. And so I think ultimately the two options are, one, he makes huge concessions and tries to browbeat his moderates to pass a bill that will be used against them next year that, you know, cuts funding for everything pretty much, or he has to work with Democrats to pass a budget. And that might even be a stopgap initially. So, you know, it'll be very interesting. We've been kind of building towards this all year as he tries to keep, you know, the Freedom Caucus in check. And they have grown increasingly restless and see little reason to give him a win at this point. So I fully expect there to be a government shutdown. I think it could drag on anywhere from a couple days to several weeks, depending on, you know, how difficult the right wants to make McCarthy's life. But I think ultimately what will happen is he'll make a deal with Democrats, because that's the only deal to be made.
It does, because otherwise, again, just as they're getting this debate started and people are getting set to vote in some of those early states, if they're seeing a government shutdown, you know, I just don't see a lot of finger pointing going toward Joe Biden, but rather toward the people who want, you know, cuts in Social Security and Medicare and things like that. So this is actually the quiet season, if you think about what this fall could bring. But, you know, I laugh because, I mean, summers used to be so quiet. But no, not now.
Yeah, I miss those days. You know, Congress is technically, I mean, they are on recess right now, so it's quiet in Washington, but you have a former president getting indicted. You have, you know,
the possibility of a shutdown not far away. Yeah, there's always something looming out there. But we're very thankful to have you to help straighten it all out and explain it all for us. Kia Vakil, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. I have to admit that I was a little confused before we do our next segment here, which is all about, you know, this day in history and, you know, a little music break. And the first thing you're going to hear in the next segment is Good Times. And I saw that at first and I thought, oh, from the TV show. No, not that one. The song from Chic is coming up. And as we noted as well, the anniversary of Patrick Swayze's birth. So we've got that coming up. In our next hour, we're going to be talking to Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Trib and the Chicago Sun-Times, about some of the national media coverage, especially of the latest Trump indictment, and whether there is an appropriate level of skepticism, shall we say, about some of Trump's defense, including his most recent request from his lawyers to put off one of his trials until 2026. Good luck with that one. All that and more after this. You're up north. Yeah, it's that version of Good Times. The unmistakable Nile Rodgers and Chic with the number one song from this day in 1979. All right, let's do some birthdays, not just the anniversary of Patrick Swayze's birth 71 years ago, but actor Robert Redford. Robert Redford turns 87 today, born this day in 1936. Actor Dennis Leary is 66. Two actors are 54 years old today. Both Ed Norton and Christian Slater were born on this day in 1969. And comedian Andy Samberg turns 45 years old today.
That's now the next no clip. I know he is 45, but Andy yes. Samberg feels like somebody who is perpetually 35.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I did the same double take, and I also had to do the math, and it's like, okay, unless they're lying, it says here he was born in 1978, but yeah, he's somebody that he's kind of got that Dick Clark thing going where he's going to be forever youthful. Well, who am I kidding? Robert Redford turned 87 today. You'd look at him and you'll go, well, you know, he's no longer, you know, boyish, but he would pass for 67, you know, some people just have the genes. Next clip we're going to play is from Schoolhouse Rock. And so people, especially women of a certain age, are going to really like this one when I tell you that it was on this day in 1920 that the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified, guaranteeing women the right to vote.
Well, we were suffering until suffering. Oh! Not a woman you can vote, no matter what age. Oh! And the 19th Amendment struck down that restrictive rule.
Oh, yeah! Some of you are singing that out loud. Former First Lady Rosalynn Carter turns 96 years old today. Caitlin Olson, the actress, is 48. That one shocks me almost as much as Andy Samberg, that Caitlin Olson is 48 years old today. But how long has It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia been on, Aaron? It goes way back, right? It's got to be 10 plus years. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And I always forget the real names of the actors besides Charlie Day, because that's also Charlie, and obviously Danny DeVito. But
yes,
yeah, she's D for
yes.
those who are not aware.
She's insanely good. All right, we've been talking about Woodstock the past couple of days because this is the anniversary of that music festival from 1969. Jimi Hendrix closed out Woodstock with a performance of Hey Joe on the early Monday morning of Woodstock. So as the festival headliner, he was supposed to close things out the previous night, but the entire show, the entire festival ended up running so long, he didn't take the stage until Monday morning. His set also included the now infamous and scorching rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. And to which I would add, not to sound like a grouchy old man here, but, you know, it ran into Monday morning. Well, it's not like all these people had jobs anyway, right? Out in the crowd. No, it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and of course it went into overtime. It was historic. We normally talk about the top 40 or the Hot 100 charts, but let's give a listen to what the number one song was on the country chart this day in 1973 from Conway Twitty and Loretta Lynn.
Louisiana woman, Mississippi man, we get together every time we can. And Mississippi River can't keep us apart. There's too much love in this Mississippi heart.
Too much love in Louisiana heart.
That's just one of those songs when my mom was going through her country music phase in the mid-70s, and KRSI was the big country station at the time in the Twin Cities. I think it was 980 AM. And, I mean, you couldn't swing a dead fiddle without hitting Loretta Lynn or Conway Twitty on the radio. So now we'll come way ahead to 2017. So 6 years ago today, a big mystery from Taylor Swift. She wiped clean her Facebook account, her Twitter account, her Instagram account, and her personal YouTube. And then 3 days later, began posting video of a snake in order to tease her scathing song, Look What You Made Me Do.
Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do. I don't like your kingdom keys.
So there's the mystery behind her scrubbing her accounts. And Aaron, you asked if it was a familiar song to me, and I think just barely, not being a Swiftie myself. A lot of respect for her, but I don't think I could have plucked this song out of a haystack.
Oh, this one I absolutely can, because I remember when it came out, my sisters were all listening to it, and I saw them sitting over at a computer with a YouTube video up and laughing, and I was like, what you watching there? And then they played this song, and I just sat there gobsmacked, and I was like, wow, the lyrical genius. Ooh, look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do. You know, sorry, the old Taylor can't come to the phone right now. Why? Because she's dead.
Oh. You know, we can't all be Lennon and McCartney with every hit. And
yeah, most of her songs are amazing.
Most of her songs are. They are. So sometimes one's going to, you know, not strike the bullseye with everybody, especially, I guess, with the male demographic, shall we say. And I love a good revenge song or a good lashing out song. In fact, we should probably come up. We could come up with a list of those, you know, some that
definitely
are especially good. What's the... Let's see, Britney Spears has Womanizer. What was Paula Abdul had Cold Hearted Snake. You know, so there's a few. We should, if people want to send us in a list of some of their favorite, you know, moments of really not liking men so much, we would take those songs. I'd make a playlist out of those.
Definitely. Oh, and by the way, I did look up the debut of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It came out August 4th of, do you want to guess the year?
2010?
2005. It is almost 20 years old.
That's incredible. And I'm not a regular watcher of it, but I mean, I can't help but admire every time I come across it. And again, I think Caitlin Olsen is just terrific in it, but they're all so good. And yeah, that show definitely had some staying power. All right, so there again, that's today's history lesson and music break for this Friday morning. It's August 18th, and I've got just enough time to get to one of the stories that we didn't get to earlier as we were unpacking the news, and that is noting that lawyers for former President Trump said yesterday it'll take them years to prepare to defend the former president against allegations that he, you know, criminally conspired to rig an election. So they asked the judge yesterday to postpone the trial until April of 2026, claiming that they have to, you know, read all of the documents because, you know, there aren't keyword searches and computers that do all this work for lawyers' offices already. And granted, you know, prosecutors always have a, you know, plenty of time to build their case, and then the defense has to look through the material. But April 2026 just sounds like your classic, you know, Trump delay tactic. So I don't know that the trial is going to be held in 6 months the way the prosecutor wants, but 2026, that ain't happening either. Much more in our second hour of Up North News Radio. We'll be back.